Hello and welcome to Playing Out of Character Podcast. This is an actual play podcast where we'll sit around and play some cool, fun games. This is going to be our setup episode, or episode zero, as we call it in the podcasting business. My name is Gavin. I'll be your MC, and we'll go around the virtual table, starting with Pearson, and we'll all give our introduction.
Hey there, I'm Pearson. I am playing the character Mags Morales. She is a witch. I, in real life, am a professor at Florida State University, where I study literature, media, and culture as a PhD student. I am also a writer. That's my first of many passions. I'm a community organizer, and I host a podcast called Coffee with Comrades.
It's an excellent podcast. Everyone should go check it out after you get done listening to episode zero and episode one. I've been on Coffee with Comrades once. My brother, who we'll introduce in a second, has been on Coffee with Comrades. And I believe Taylor, who will also be introduced, has been on an episode or two.
He was supposed to be on an episode, but stupid recording bullshit got in the way.
Yeah, so, I'll be on there at some point.
For sure. And as far as like tabletop role-playing games go, I've been playing for, 7 years now. I'm pretty sure your dad got you into it, Gavin, but like, I think I was the one who kind of bridged the gap between the, like, at least you, me, Caleb, and Taylor playing together.
Yes, I remember our first session together. Taylor played a character named Felix, but...
I was a bard.
Yes. Pearson's a cool guy, and you can find him here and at Coffee with Comrades, the podcast. Pearson, where can we find you on social media?
Just my name, at Pearson Bolt on Twitter. That's really all I got.
Cool. So next at the virtual table, if we could introduce Caleb.
Well, okay. My name is Caleb. I'm a piece of shit for a living. No, I'm just kidding. I work as a cart attendant at Target, so I don't really do much. I'm an evolutionary biology major. My experience with tabletop RPGs was what little we had with Dad when we were really young, and then, of course, what we picked up with Pearson and Taylor and stuff like that. I, too, have a podcast. It's called Macabre Media Podcast, where we review just horror movies, books, not really books, but video games.
You should talk about more books. Books are good.
I agree.
Yeah.
Stephen King.
I should.
Or literally anyone else.
I've been playing tabletop RPGs for, 2 years? 2.5 years?
Roughly, yeah. And Caleb, what are you? Let's give a quick introduction to your character, just like a name and the class or archetype.
Oh, okay, yeah. My character's name is Elliot Cannaval, and he is a vampire.
Oh, very cool! I'm very excited about that. All right, next at the table. How about Tristan?
All right, yeah, sure. Hey guys, I'm Tristan. I'm going to be playing the character Leonard White here. He's a tainted, and I'm looking forward to doing demon-y stuff. I'm a...
Demons?
I'm an electrical engineering student at UCF, and, Yeah, that's about it. I got into RPGs with Star Wars, so I play a lot of Genesis and all the Fantasy Flight games. We're going to play Urban Shadows, and that's just fine with me, so I'm excited.
And Tristan, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're popping your podcast cherry, is that correct?
Yeah, sure, that's a phrase you could use to say it. Yeah.
So, in case you haven't already caught on, this is not going to be a child-friendly podcast. There will be many, many rated R themes.
So are you saying that I can say fuck on this podcast?
Whoa, Pearson!
You can say fuck?
Pearson can't say fuck.
It's just Taylor. Taylor's not allowed to say fuck. Okay. And that actually is a good segue into Taylor. Talk about your non-fuckery self.
Oh, whoa, my virgin ears, man.
No fucks.
All right. I'm Taylor Perry. I'm Taylor Perry. Oh gosh, in terms of like RPGs, I've been playing for quite some time. My brother got me into it, and this is like for those that play RPGs, you probably know that D&D is in its fifth edition, and I started playing around like the weird 3.5 or whatever era.
R.I.P.
It's been a while. I've been playing quite a while. And then I kind of stopped playing, and then Pearson got me back into it because he started developing a real passion for it when 5e I think was getting real big.
That's a real nice way of saying that I'm a gargantuan fucking nerd.
No. You helped cultivate and foster a love for the game within me, so I thank you for that. In terms of what I do right now, I was a chemistry major, graduated UCF, went on to do a little bit of analytical chemistry over in a lab in Maine, came back, and now I'm teaching chemistry at the 10th, 11th grade level. Depends on how smart the kids are. In terms of my character, because we are playing Urban Shadows, I'm playing a character by the name of Rowan Worrell, who is a collector and trader extraordinaire.
Finally, I guess, as I said, my name's Gavin, I'm your guys' MC. And as far as what I do for school, I'm just bouncing into the anthropology major out of the architecture major, just because that's a lot of fucking work in terms of architecture.
So is anthropology.
As of now, anthropology is the study of the
it's
evolution
still
of
a lot
human
of work.
Culture.
Yeah, I thought you said
that. Oh, I thought you said what is. Oh,
come
yeah,
on,
no.
Gavin,
it,
I've read a book.
It definitely
I know what anthropology
it is.
Maybe it was for the viewers. Yeah, or the listeners.
I thought you were asking
viewers,
for the listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Staring at us.
He's just copying
well, anyway,
me because my evolutionary biology is already taken.
Oh, there it is. The podcast ends as soon as
yikes.
It begins.
Well, there we go, guys. Good episode.
All right, well, see you guys later.
As far as what I do for a living, I work in construction, and by construction I mean I work with the materials that you use to form concrete, and I do that in the freezing fucking cold of Seattle, and I've been playing RPGs for just about as long as Caleb. But yeah, that's our introductions,
did you say
I
concrete?
Guess.
The material.
Yes, concrete.
Do you mean liquid concrete?
No. I'll tell you more.
Do it off.
I'll tell you
mic.
More about it.
We'll introduce the listeners to the wonderful world of cement later, I think, if they so choose.
Yeah. It's just we're just a bunch of friends. We've all played RPGs off the mic for a long time. And I thought it might be finally time to bring it on the mic and share an actual play podcast with the people who might want to listen. But as we've mentioned, we're playing the game Urban Shadows, created by Magpie Games. It's a Powered by the Apocalypse system. And what do you guys know about Urban
it's
Shadows?
It's a political urban fantasy.
And I introduced you to it, so I have that a little feather to tuck in my cap.
Caleb, it sounds like you... Oh, sorry.
Tristan. No, I was going to say Tristan or Taylor. You got anything?
No.
I think I played this, like... played this maybe twice that's from what I gathered from the game that's a good enough spiel as any. It's basically urban politics but with very strange creatures out of like the Gothic London era.
Caleb stole that directly off the book cover,
right.
Which says political urban fantasy. So the tone of this game, let me be upfront in saying that this game is going to be a little more dark and gritty. While we have some funny folks in this outfit, the tone of this game is generally going to be a little more serious. That's not to say we're not going to have fun and joke around, but compared to some of the other actual play podcasts, this is not going to be what's going to be more of a hybrid of a comedy and drama podcast. This is an actual play. None of it's scripted. We're just going to roll some dice and see how the narrative develops.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So some of the mechanics of the game. One of the first mechanics I think we should talk about is corruption. And do you guys, anyone want to throw down on the corruption front?
I can take a stab at that. It's probably the only thing I have any knowledge of from what I've read. It seems like every character sort of has their own specific corruption move, as well as other things they can do that might tack on corruption. And basically there's a bar that fills up every time you take corruption. It fills up to about, I think, 5, and then at that point you go ahead and take a corruption move. And then it resets, and then once you fill 5 more up, you keep doing that. And eventually, once you well finish ticking all these boxes, I believe your character has to get retired and may possibly return as maybe a threat or something.
Yeah, so it's definitely you are retired as a threat. There's not really an option there. As the MC, I have complete rights to take your former play or archetype sheet, and I get to use that as a threat against the current players, and if you decide to make a new character, a threat against your character. And that's kind of saying that as they have gained corruption, they have lost control of who they are, and is now my turn as the MC who is kind of playing the heart of the city to push forth this new threat that is in the city towards
you
guys.
Very cool.
So, what about debts? Does anyone want to talk about debts?
I'll take that one. So, each character has a debt in which they owe to both NPCs and the playing characters around them. That can come in a variety of ways, but the preset debts you can find on the character sheets of each archetype, and it is kind of specific to your backstory. When it comes to other playing character debts, I have no idea how that works.
Well, basically, they kind of work like a... There's a select list of moves, I believe, in the rulebook that it actually covers that it says you can choose to spend your debt on a player character to, like, basically force them to help you or not help you. I kind of found that interesting just because, like, you know, it's a party anyway, so you would think that there's that sort of interaction. But basically, this says, like, it's kind of like an oh shit button, where it's like you need someone to either distract someone or, like, you need someone to help you, something like that. That's kind of how the player character ones work. It's kind of interesting just because it does effectively force actions on other player characters. One thing to note is that you are able to... try and resist or decline your debts, but you do get punished for that if you don't roll high enough. So even if technically, I guess you could just not listen to a player character who's very clearly asking for help, and I mean, you would probably mark corruption by doing so, but it's just keep in mind, you know, debts are both, you know, imperative and non-imperative, I guess.
Yeah, and the thing with debts is you kind of want to use them strategically. If you know that there's a certain NPC who can help you with your current objective, you can cash in a debt that will cause this NPC to help you with your objective. However, on my end as the MC, I can use debts to interrupt your guys's progress, to kind of pull you guys away and create tension and politicize the city. Yeah, debts are just, I kind of think they're more of the currency of the game, and they're more of a way to build the narrative. And you mentioned rolling high enough, Tristan, but Pearson, do you want to talk about what it is like, or what the dice rolls are like in this
game?
Sure,
so this entire game revolves around the D6. You roll 2d6 in most of your moves. Everybody has access to basic moves as well as archetype-specific moves. When you roll If you get below a 6, something bad happens. If you get between a 7 and a 9, there will be what's called a mixed success, and you will succeed. However, there will be some sort of consequence and some sort of caveat there. If you get a 10 to a 11, then you definitely succeed and you don't have any negative consequences. And if you have a 12 plus, then you have a really strong, powerful success where you have more agency over what happens in the narrative as a player character.
Yeah, and that's super important to note, because like Pearson had mentioned, we have both basic moves and we have archetype-specific moves. So sometimes it's directly related to the narrative of your character on how you fail. And that's going to be fun for me, because this kind of leads to the next topic that I was thinking of, is framing scenes. And essentially, it's my job to kind of move the game in a way that is more thematic or theatric. And I frame scenes depending on how well you guys succeed. So if you fail, I can make what's called a hard move, and that's when I put you guys in immediate danger. However, if you get that mixed success, I can use a soft move, and it sets you up for danger, and you can avoid that danger. And it's kind of my job to orchestrate scenes so there's constantly something happening for the listeners and for the players, myself included.
Yeah, just to add to that, one of the things I really like about this dice system is the fact that there is a mixed success, which is just a really cool mechanic, because up until I played the style of game in games like Spire, it was pretty binary. You either succeeded or you didn't. I really like it's such a simple spin on the dice mechanics, but it really offers like a lot of narrative driven choice.
One thing too that I think is really important for us to note is this game is pretty much an improvisational conversation, where you guys come up with a lot of the plot hooks yourselves by telling me about the people that you're interacting with and what's going on in the city. And it's kind of my job to sit back and harvest and reap the things that you set up. But I don't have much written as far as like session notes and stuff like that for session one that we're going to do after this episode. And it's very much reliant on us doing literal improv, which is going to be very fun. And that kind of leads into snowballing narrative. And if anyone wants to cover that, feel free.
You brought up, you actually brought up the idea of like, it's talking about the narrative actually reminds me about the pacing of the game is a little weird, just because the game itself is very much like a drama focused game. So like in gameplay, like hopefully, there will be very few times where we specifically refer to like skills or roles, because skills are practically phrases of themselves, even in the rule book. So basically the game is very much narratively driven by our actions. However, it keeps an interesting mix of that, because it's a very open-ended game with very closed options once you get to those decision points, because basically, you know, our classes aren't called classes, they're called archetypes, which we've said a few times now, and a lot like in Monster of the Week or some other Powered by the Apocalypse games, it is true to that. So this is the game itself is kind of assembled like a movie or a TV show, where not only do we have basically you know, we put ourselves into certain situations and have discrete options in the results of our roles as to something like, you know, how well we succeed or how not well we succeed. And also, like, our characters are effectively, while we still play them and realize the character and their motivations, they're still effectively on timelines as we level up and, you know, stuff like that. You know, all of our characters will experience our own individual classes' timelines, which are made to reinforce, you know, obviously certain behaviors. So even though it might sound like, you know, I'm half devil, so that represents like a race or something in a different game, this is all tied to the consummate idea of an archetype, more so than just a class.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. And Pearson, I think you were going to say something about the snowballing narrative.
Yeah, so as far as snowballing narratives go, essentially the idea is like, you know, when you have a snowball rolling down a hill, it grows larger and larger and larger and larger until you know, eventually the metaphor goes, there's an avalanche that's falling down, right? And so the idea is that one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another, and until chaos is everywhere and carnage will likely follow that chaos. And the story really thrives in those moments of high tension and drama where the avalanche is falling at its most ferocious.
Yeah, exactly. And it's my job as the MC to act like a spider and kind of take the threads that you guys give me and weave this greater spider web. And very similar to the snowball narrative, at the very end, we should feel like we're kind of caught in this web that we've been weaving this entire time.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I really like your spider metaphor about like weaving the narrative, because most of the plot line that I'm coming up with is coming straight out of my asshole. So... much like a spider.
I thought that was going to be a really graceful joke about the vamp and how they have a web and all the features.
I was wondering where you were going with that for a second, Taylor, and I was not disappointed.
And that's kind of the thing as well, is we all have individual storylines as far as the PCs go. You all have individual storylines, and you've sent those to me, and I know those. But we're also sharing in one individual storyline. So we're very much this Urban Shadows, and this particular narrative that we're telling in the system arc is like a river with multiple different rivulets coming off.
Is that
off
a real
it.
Word?
And
yes, it is.
I think so. So essentially, we have the main river, which is going to be the coalition storyline that we're going to be telling, and I'll talk about that more later. But each rivulet will be the individual stories of Leonard and Rowan and Elliot and Mags, and those are going to dip in and out of each other, of course, but it's going to be very fun to have individual stories as well as a collective story. And something that makes up that story, or makes up the story, will be something called factions. And those are integral to what the game is. Does anyone want to talk about factions?
I can take them.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Yeah, so, I mean, factions in this game are a little interesting. The rulebook kind of explains them as, like, tied to the classes. So, for example, I'm a tainted, and my character, Leonard... loosely in some form it belongs to the wild faction because of the character's origins or anything, and it's a small faction, so it includes the tainted and the fae. So if you pick, you know, the characters that are playing those two archetypes, they kind of exist within this faction, and you basically it's not so much like a level up kind of deal where you have specific specific perks for being this close with the faction, then you cross a threshold and it changes something else. It's more of an extra set of stats. So if you, we actually have all of our four main stats, and then we each have four faction stats for the mortality, which covers like the humans, I guess sort of aware humans. The knight, which is kind of like a classic monster, spin. Power, which is
wizards,
enlightened humans. Throws immortals in there, but I don't know about. Where immortals come in game wise, and then obviously the wild is just kind of like the, you know, what's typically the fae in other universes like D&D. And in this setting, I think Gavin has some interesting takes on each of these factions that he has assembled himself. So we might not always call something like knight the knight faction. It'll have its own name, or you know, some of these will have different names. But yeah, basically it's going to allow us to do things in the world with faction stats.
I should interject, actually. We should just let the listeners know right now that whereas this game is generally supposed to be tied to some urban area like a city on Earth, Gavin has decided to take his own spin on the game and just launch us into the far future in another solar system somewhere. So, we should keep that in mind.
And that's actually a great segue to me wanting to welcome the listeners and player characters to the world I created called Tantalus. Tantalus is a city planet. It's a relatively small city planet affixed in a solar system that I have not named. And it's acting as a main hub for corporatism. Think kind of like Coruscant of the
That's
Star
what
Wars
I was just
universe.
About to ask. So it's like a full, the whole planet city. Yeah. Like, we're not seeing the ground sort of deal.
Exactly, yeah. You're not seeing, well...
Or the Earth, I should
sometimes
say.
Sometimes.
Yeah, you're not seeing any, like, you nature. Know, it's all been pretty much industrialized over, right? Unless you go
or,
elsewhere.
Right, on the right. surface, yeah. yes. Some of the inspirations that came for Tantalus are... I wanted to do something very much inspired by things like Cowboy Bebop. And that's this retro-futuristic noir. And what I mean by retro-futurist is Cowboy Bebop uses a lot of phrases like calling criminals hoods and stuff like that. And using more of this pulp fiction, like dime novel-esque way of describing things and setting the mood. And that's kind of what I'm hoping to do with Tantalus. There's not a robotic presence on Tantalus. It's not like some Isaac Asimov iRobot style thing. The AI are actually illegal because of a dispute that happened long ago, but in the power faction that we'd mentioned earlier. It's very Cowboy Bebop inspired. It's you can kind of picture Coruscant if it was really dirty and corporate, and the it's a very gray environment. That and the tone is very gritty and very moody and noir. But again, that isn't to stifle any humor that we might interject as players. The general environment that I've built is intended to be gray, but that doesn't mean the characters have to, if that makes sense. And the culture as well is very much this hierarchy of you have the super rich, you have the street urchins and things like that, and you have the struggle for between four different factions that we had mentioned earlier: the power of the night, mortality, and the wild.
Gavin, are you saying that there's class struggle on Tantalus?
There's class struggle for
I
sure.
Understand.
There's class struggle for sure, and it's very much we have a tense storm that's hovering over the planet as these four factions are vying for power on who can overtake one another, maybe for means that we could call ethically good, or maybe for means that are very self-serving. But regardless of the means, the end goal is to have complete control over Tantalus. Which kind of leads me into, or leads us into, a description of the factions. And Caleb, do you feel comfortable covering the Night faction and talking a little bit about that?
Hell nah. I could try, I guess. I could try.
Okay.
So
yeah, go for it.
When in a lot of settings like this, there is a ruling corporation. One that monopolizes most businesses and kind of takes over as the corporate control. In this case, that is Umbra, which is what the Night faction is in this universe. The Umbra is, from what I understand, pretty vague. It's reaches far and wide, but it's kind of shallow almost, I think, in a lot of cases, but there is a very deep center. Yeah, that's all I can really say.
It's the Illuminati Corporation, to simplify it.
The ruling elite.
If the Illuminati... Yeah, it's the ruling elite. It's if the Illuminati was getting some back alley dancing with the Yakuza. It's very much inspired by the Yakuza, who have kind of their hand in like all different pots. But it's intentionally vague, and it's... I think Pearson would agree with me, and it's kind of structured like the bullshit jobs of David Graeber, where there's lots of just job titles that don't actually have any purpose or any meaning, but they're just there to reinforce a corporate
they're
structure.
They're the bourgeoisie.
Boom. There
oh,
it
yeah,
is.
For sure.
That's all you had to say.
yeah, and they're the bourgeoisie that intentionally stifles the proletariat, which kind of... leads into a more metaphysical direction of the power faction. And Pearson, do you want to talk a little bit about the power faction?
Yeah, absolutely. So the power faction is divided into two distinct groups. On the one hand, you have the Monastery, who are the wizards. They are a eclectic group of people who are studying to amass power and to collect knowledge. Sometimes these people come by their power spontaneously, and sometimes they come to their power through more nefarious means. There are also certain wizards who exist outside of the Monastery and can even be at odds with the Monastery, despite the fact that they too have these metaphysical arcane powers that come from the Aether. There's also, the other hand, is the Seer Guilds, who are these oracles. Now, oracles are sort of the more mystical kind of... You can kind of think of them as being more traditional, like monks or soothsayers. They are more akin to divination styles of magical expression rather than flexing their elemental power over others.
Mm-hmm. And something I tried to structure with the wizards and the oracles is wizards have to study the ether or quickly
like call upon it,
find a tutor who will teach them at great speed what the ether is, whereas the oracles are touched by the ether, and they're kind of like wizards in Dungeons and Dragons and sorcerers in Dungeons and Dragons. One studies the ether, one is born with the ether. And the ether as a concept, just a rabbit trail really quick, is inspired by both the Dreamlands of H.P. Lovecraft, the Nightmare Frontier of Bloodborne, and the Warp from Warhammer 40,000, as it's this kind of tumultuous, nebulous fourth dimension, but this outside dimension. And that's where all of the magic kind of bleeds into, I guess you could call the material plane or Tantalus. So if there's any magical things, or for example, demons or even the Fae, all of this comes from the ether into Tantalus or into Earth with another arc that we've done before this was recorded. So the ether is kind of this catch-all of metaphysical power, and it is the source of all of the really wild, fucked up shit that bleeds into the material. But yeah, do you want to take up the mortality, Taylor?
So mortality is kind of what you think it is. It's just basic humans without any ridiculous like supernatural abilities or anything. Because they're like probably the most common of all the factions, because it's just mortal people, it's a pretty large umbrella term. They don't really have any centralized groups like others might, you know, that are less spread and more concentrated in other areas. Because mortals are just so populous, they're kind of just, they don't have one singular agenda like others might. And that's actually where my character is in. So I would say, yeah, they just don't really have a structured central goal, unless I'm missing something that you want to fill in, Gavin.
No, you pretty much nailed it on the head. There's, of course, smaller hunter orders that go in with the hunter archetype, but largely it's the mortality faction is the oppressed masses. They're kind of under the foot of the wild power and knight factions, and they kind of are struggling against these three factions that have a greater power, but the mortality has the power of the masses, and they have numbers on their side and the ability to adapt, reach out of the tradition that you find in the power and in and some of the more physical limitations of the knight faction, and also they have freedom from the etheric limitations that come from being a wild. We'll talk more about that with Tristan, who's selected now to do the wild description.
Yeah, all right. Well, as the resident wild expert here, it's real simple. All the other factions kind of have, around three, maybe four archetypes that are balanced as functions of the archetype, or of the faction.
Power has two.
Okay, yep. And Wild also has two. So basically, they're the Fae, who are kind of these ethereal beings who are sort of obsessed with promises. They came straight from the Fae. They're here for who knows what reason. They've been pulled out of space-time, but they're here now, and they're doing whatever they want. Maybe they're finding a way back. Who knows? And there's also the Tainted, who, unlike the Fae, aren't beings purely from the ether. They're demons in the sense that they've, in some chain of events, signed some sort of contract with the demon, and they now are forced to, they've basically, you know, sold their soul, they've made a deal with the devil, and now a lot of them are trying to get their souls back because they want to be human again, they want to be normal, who knows, whatever their motivations are, but yeah, basically they both reside in the underground of the city, which is referred to as the Old World. It's supposedly the strongest connection to the Aether, you know, a little bit of big magic going on there, and it's, you know, it's got all kinds of weird spots. I believe it's known to change appearance in some forms.
Tristan, are you saying that there's some BDE down there?
Well, I mean, I'll let you figure that out. I just know there's some sort of energy. So, I mean, so yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the Wild isn't so much a faction with a capital F and a trademark and stuff as the other ones. It's not as organized. It's, I mean, you know, most of the, all of the characters spend some time underground in this old world, and there's no real hierarchy. It's a lot of, I think of it kind of like a rat races, because all these Tainted have to try and indirectly compete with each other to get their souls back. So some may care a ton, and some may care not so much. And so it leads to this kind of cross sort of interactivity with the Tainted, and then the Fae just kind of as these pure ethereal beings kind of have their own role to play in the yeah, faction.
Absolutely. And the final unofficial faction, it's called the Coalition. And this is a working title, and this is actually something we all discussed. And we want to open up having any listeners that we have tweet with the hashtag PlayingOutPod at us with the opportunity to have your name for the Coalition picked. So feel free to tweet us and have us have a name for the Coalition for us. It was kind of a way for us to reach out to you guys and get you guys involved in the narrative building of the game. This Coalition, though, is it's essentially a way to destabilize the current faction system. This Coalition is full of different, I guess you could say, archetypes, but more specifically, it's full of different people that are from different parts of Tantalus who are all upset with the current faction system one way or another. They want to see it.
Is it the Antifa?
It's not Antifa.
Damn it.
Because it's not Antifa because it's not decentralized. The format of the Coalition is there is a world council that's kind of overseeing all of Tantalus. This is extremely it's extremely hidden. It's the people that are part of this council are intentionally unknown. But throughout Tantalus, which is made up of 546 sectors that are kind of like individual cities on the city planet, there are chapters that kind of maintain control of about 20 sectors each. Within each chapter, it consists of groups, and the groups act as the hands of the chapters, and the chapters get their orders from the World Council. So orders go from the World Council down to the chapters. The chapters distribute it to whatever group they think is best suited for the job, and the group is kind of overseen by a handler. And a handler is someone from these chapters who are kind of helping and guiding each individual group, which is usually four to ten people. Each individual group will answer to their handler and get missions and missives and bounties from their handlers. And this is where we find our current cast of characters, played by Tristan, Pearson, Caleb, and Taylor, are part of a group in the Coalition. And that group is overseen by the handler Vincent Lucassi, who we'll talk about later. But the general motives of the Coalition are unknown, besides wanting to destabilize it, destabilize the faction. And what I mean by that is people aren't clearly communicating what the end goal is of faction, like what comes after the destabilization of faction. Well, do they want to rise to power? Do they want to just leave it as this anarchic society? Do they want to install some communalism in there? But yeah, that's generally what's going on with the Coalition and the factions as a whole. Is the Coalition is made up of members from every faction and every facet of the society.
So it's like a ununited left.
It could be. There's not a strict political, I guess. I don't want to say there's a left and a right, because Tantalus might not have. Yeah, there's definitely.
What I mean is, like, is that analogous to, like, say, the left in the United States or whatever it may be, that is very, like, disconnected, poor communication, no proper end goal?
Oh, no. They have good communication. It's a very strict structure that is very functioning. It's just they've obscured their end goal on purpose. They have an end goal. Okay. They just don't want to share it with general populace because they don't want that end goal stifled. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see your guys' involvement in the Coalition, because there's not a political stance on it. There are some corporate bigwigs in it, but there are also some street urchins. And speaking of corporate bigwigs and street urchins, let's talk about your guys' characters.
Good segue.
Yeah.
Before we dig into this, I think it's important for us to introduce, like, the physicality of our characters, both in this episode zero and in episode one, just in case people don't listen to the episode zero. That way they still have a visual picture of what we look like.
And if you guys don't listen to episode... So wait, you're listening to episode zero now. Anyway. Tristan, do you want to give us a good start off?
Yeah. Hey, wait, before we start, I don't know if we want to do it this way. I know that, like, the way the game works, it has a specific way that it wants us to introduce ourselves. Basically, what we're supposed to say is we're supposed to talk about our starting deaths. We're supposed to introduce our character, like, their name, their look, demeanor, answers to these intro questions that each sheet gives us. Is that how we're going to do this? Just so I have, like,
yeah,
a format?
Yeah, that makes sense. So what I want you to kind of talk about is your name, your archetype, your appearance / personality, and then give me a little bit of a hook, or some, like, just enough background story to get me interested in your character. But don't, I actually would prefer that we don't divulge our debts up front.
Yeah, it does say that you only divulge additional information that other characters might know. So if the other characters aren't going to know this starting off, you don't have to give that information.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Tristan, who are you?
So, as I mentioned before, I'm going to be playing Leonard White in this game, and he's a tainted, so he's half demon, but basically he's a businessman. He's a realtor around basically wherever he can get the highest bidder in Tantalus, and he just sells any sort of real estate to the ultra rich. So he could care less about people's motivations, how they got their money. He kind of thinks that all these people with all this money are kind of full of shit, but they're stupid. I think the best way I've described it is, in his thoughts, the people that are buying real estate from him are the stupid rich people, and he's the genius rich person making money.
I love that shit.
Yeah.
Tristan, do you have a character voice for
Leonard? He's fairly drab. I do have a character voice in mind. I just don't want to put everyone to sleep by using that as my entire description of him, because I'm kind of going to be jumping around from in and out of character, if I would be. Cool. He's about 6'4". He's a very he's not strong, but he's built. I kind of describe him as he looks like if he worked out he'd be shredded, but he doesn't. So he's a tall guy. He's not skinny or sort of wispy. He's definitely a person, but as I said, he was a real estate agent, and he kept selling until eventually he had managed to be tricked, and someone had outsmarted him, and he signed a contract. He signed his own paperwork, but his own paperwork was modified, and now he has literally made a deal with the devil. We'll probably get into that later, so I don't want to, you know, divulge too much of that. But, yeah, he's a fairly disconnected, calculating, kind of, sort of a cold, and, careless in terms of interpersonal relationships kind of person. He is, protecting, I'll just say, a vagrant, basically, right now. He doesn't know his name, but he thought that the other guy was in some unfortunate circumstances. He knows that he got signed into a different contract with a demon that this vagrant couldn't possibly uphold his end of the bargain for, so he's not happy about that. He thinks it's unfair, so he tries to keep him under his eye whenever he can. He is being protected by someone named Vana, who's an acquaintance of his that he's met in the circles that he is around at parties that he really has no interest in. He is indebted to her a bit for being protected. And he also, of course, has his demon, who's named Denor.
I love
Denor
that name.
Denor is a pretty brutal, very sort of like machismo-focused demon. Leonard, who's this, you know, this guy who just kind of walks around trying to make money and not talk to people or anything, is now tasked with kind of building the army of this demon, basically. He's trying to broker more contracts, and he's trying to get some more lost souls to bring back to hell or the aether or wherever they're going. So it's very much a sort of, I'd say kind of like a doom demon kind of deal, like that, kind of that aesthetic.
Well, hold on.
Big, brutal.
There's lots of demons in Dune. Or Doom, not Dune. Thank you, Frank Herbert, for Dune, but not that one. Doom. There's lots of demons. So if you don't mind sending me a picture, and then I'll tweet out what your demon appearance kind of looks like.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, of course. I can get into that with you later, and yeah, we'll find out. Leonard's demon form himself is, it's coming up basically all the time in this game, so we'll find that more about that later. So yeah, that's Leonard.
And one thing I wanted to ask, you and I were talking kind of privately about Leonard, and you described him as think of Wolf of Wall Street without all the fucking. Elaborate on that, please.
That's
such a good description for a character.
Just like. Absolute debauchery. He really doesn't care about his humanity. That's something that I didn't cover too much. But he signed that contract with the demon, and he said, "Well, fuck it. I got outsmarted by this someone else. I couldn't have possibly thought I would ever get outsmarted. So if this guy bested me, then I guess I'll just, you know, do whatever I want and." Business is business. So, I described him to Gavin as, think of a character from The Wolf of Wall Street with absolutely no fucking. So, yeah, lots of, just like, he really does whatever he wants. He's pretty self-destructive. and is but is just, you know, obviously not at all concerned with interpersonal relationships.
Very good.
And, you know, just not a he actually tries to not be charismatic. I think I would say he is charismatic, but he tries in the opposite direction.
What an asshole.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, honestly, maybe I shouldn't just jump in, but I think our characters are relatively similar, so I think, I mean, I wouldn't mind sharing my character next unless someone else wanted to.
Yeah, go for it.
Go, Caleb.
Okay, yeah, so I play a character named Elliot Cannaval. He's a vampire, roughly 120 years old. He got turned when he was about 44, so he lost his chance at eternal youth. So he has about like graying hairs on the side, but like black hair on top, you know. He's inspired
Silver Fox.
Yeah, he's silver a silver fox. Foxy.
Is he a good looking guy?
Very angular features, square jaw, which really lends to his benefit as he feeds. He's inspired by the neuroticness of Patrick Bateman from American Psycho and Tyrell Wellick from Mr. Robot.
Very good. Good picture. Good picture.
His big thing is to just like get as far as he can as quickly as possible. He grew up or he worked a very shitty job as an assistant manager, and he was trying his hardest to like get through the grinding gears of capitalism, and it just wasn't working for him until one fateful day. And now he is working for Umbra, relatively high up, so he wears some cool, like very stylish suits, and he always has a cane with a blue heron on top of it.
Excellent.
Very good.
I would describe him as an ultra-capitalist. Ultra-capitalist, oh, sorry.
Gosh.
Taylor, you next.
Yes.
I nominate
yes.
you.
Yeah, sure. All right, so, yeah, my character, as I said, his name is Rowan Worrell. As far as looks go, so he's from a place called Letia, which I decided was his home planet, because this is the future in sci-fi, so why not? And in terms of looks, so this is a bit weird. I don't know if you guys... He sort of looks like a young John Austin, who was the original Gomez Adams from the Adams family. yeah, he's got... He sports a real fine mustache. He's got very, like, olive skin, but some, like, Latin American-looking sort of features here and there, like, very, like, sort of pointed cheekbones here and there. He's got red hair. That's important. He's got red hair. Because all my characters have red hair, because I'm always representing my people. So in terms of like what sort of character he is, by the way, the archetype I chose was the scholar. Now, basically, the scholar is just an expert at like analyzing and procuring very like ancient arcane, either like tomes or relics or just information in general about the arcane. He is from the Mortality faction. Real quick, actually, before I go any further, it's actually kind of cool. I'm pretty sure we have each chosen a character from an individual faction. I think I'm Mortality.
I think Gavin had
it. I didn't,
down.
Actually.
Well, I chose the Mortality. Yeah, I chose the Mortality.
I'm actually quite surprised that turned out that way. I was totally expecting
it's
both Caleb and I to
be. It's going to make some cool storytelling, I think. But I just noticed that. Yeah, I'm Mortality. So my character's thing, the spin I sort of wanted to take on the Scholar was sort of a character who likes to collect just for collecting's sake. Just someone who wants to get his hands on complete collections, like some of those neurotic, like, people that own, like, I don't know, an entire MLB, like, card collection from, like, a certain year, like, things like that. He loves collecting for the thrill of the adventure, the thrill of the hunt, if you will. Now, he's also gotten into the business because, well, he needs to fund his passion. He's also gotten in the business of trading his relics and... that profession is actually how he landed with the Coalition, which I guess we'll get into the next episode. The reason that he's on Tantalus is, and he's been in the city for about, man, I'd say a year and a half, 2 years, but the reason he went to Tantalus is, I'm not going to really give it away, but he believes that his next big score lies on Tantalus and also within Tantalus.
Hey.
And that's the only hint I'm going to give away.
That's a good hook.
I kind of... Yeah, one of the things I do want to just talk about, I know we don't really have to talk about gear, but there is one thing I kind of wouldn't mind talking about. One of the cool things about the scholars, they get to choose a messenger bag, which is like they carry their basic personal belongings and maybe like relics and stuff in every once in a while. I have three options, and I chose something called the Arcane Bag. It's a bag that is sentient and has an agenda, and when I find myself in a desperate situation, I can pull something out, and Garvey is going to tell me, or Gavin, sorry, he's going to tell me, I've taken to calling you Garvey lately, sorry, Gavin is going to tell me what that thing is. It might help, it might hinder. I decided that the bag is made out of demon hide, so it's a very fickle bag who does not care what happens to me, he just thinks it'll be funny. That's what I decided to choose. Yeah.
That sounds excellent.
So I should talk about, so basically my skill set is, again, just being able to find information on the arcane. So whereas kind of like Pearson, I guess, is you're very good at applying the arcane. I'm very good at just finding things out about it and being able to research it, which is cool. I should talk about my debts. Now, the first thing is basically I am owed a couple debts, and then I owe debts to other people. So... one character named Fargus, who we'll learn about later, he's a member of the Wild. He owes me two debts because I've secured a preserved Tantalan blue spruce seed for him. Basically, Tantalus, like at least the exterior of Tantalus, is very much wanting for wildlife because of the mass industrialization of the place. And this character is sort of a collector on his own right, but he's trying to collect like old nature samples from like the, you know, from Tantalus basically. So he owes me a couple debts for that. I owe two debts to a pair of twins named the Becker twins, who we'll learn about later. They own a diner, and I'm sort of involved with them. But they gave me intel on certain activity within the city every once in a while, so I owe them a couple debts. Gavin, did you come up with a name for the Becker twins? Because I have first names. I just didn't want to take any from you.
I'll be honest. I did not. I do got a name diner, but...
That's fine, yeah, that's fine. What was the name of the diner?
The Hearty Meal.
Oh, that's right. I just forgot the name. Basically, the twins are a girl and a boy. One of the names, you know what, I forgot the name, so we'll get into it later. I just slipped my mind. And I also owe a couple debts to a character by the name of Bull McCracken. And he is a sort of a slumlord, ganglord kind of character, kind of like a mafia-style character. I, at some point, sold him some aether-touched weapons, but I did not sell the instructions on how to use them or the ammo that comes with them. So he is a little bit angry with me, and if I want to get back into his good graces, I'm going to have to help him out with favors. Is there anything else that I need to talk about?
No, I think that covers it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, anything else we'll go over later on in the story, it'll be revealed. But yeah, Pearson, your go, man.
Terrific. So, since nobody else has used the character voice yet, I'm not going to reveal my character voice just yet.
I will say that I'm sort of developing like a weird mix between transatlantic accent and a very adventurous accent. So I'm still working on it. But anyway, continue, Pearson.
Sick, yeah. So I am playing the character Maggie Mags Morales. I am a 16-year-old Latinx girl with purple hair cut short in the back with long bangs in the front. My eyes, magnified by clear frame glasses, are the color of espresso, and I have a septum-pierced button nose. More often than not, you can find me chewing on a stick of gum and blowing pink bubbles. Most of my clothes are pretty loud, flashy, and colorful pieces. I wear like baggy yellow sweaters, puffy magenta cardigans, deep crimson jeans, stylish high top sneakers. Hanging around my neck is a faux gold ox head. I'm a Taurus, obviously. And I also have another silver chain that supports my crystal, which is a rose quartz. Holding back the bangs that are always constantly getting in my head and into my eyes anyway is a thin band with a faux gold quarter moon. So I kind of wear that like around my forehead. Generally, I have my pink backpack on my shoulders at all times. I keep a number of precious items inside, like my G-pad and my games. I have a set of tarot cards, which I do tarot readings for myself every morning. Makeup, spare clothes, wallet, keys, and a Yeah, and some other stuff. I also keep my red leather satchel style purse on me at all times. And I have a keychain like that looks like one of those like cute cats that it's actually like a knife kind of thing. So that's cool. I said this earlier in the episode zero. I am a wizard. I'm a member of the Power faction, which is a entity that I'll just say I've recently come to. Not something that I necessarily expected, but something that I've kind of stumbled into for lack of a better way of saying it. I am a very curious character, which is both a great asset and a big flaw of mine. I'm also clumsy. I'm a big klutz. I tend to be kind of mistrustful and paranoid. And I have a number of secrets that I will keep close to my chest, including what my debts are and sort of my factions and stuff like that. There's a lot going on in my backstory that I'll just kind of keep those cards close to my chest for the time being. What I will say is that I believe in like crystal therapy, and I read tarot cards every morning to start the day. I'm a very kind of mystical character. I almost imagine Mags as a Latinx diva from Overwatch mixed with like Sabrina the Teenage Witch from The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
You know what she reminds me of? It's the Carmen. There's a new Carmen Sandiego show on Netflix that my nephews watch. And there's a character who does I can't remember her name, but she essentially
is it Carmen?
A folding paper. No, it's not Carmen.
Okay.
What's when you fold paper, you know, into like
origami?
She's an origami
hamburger
assassin.
Style.
No, she's like an origami assassin, but she runs around with like a keychain with like a cat on it and stuff like that. It very much reminds me of that character that you Mags. It reminds me of Mags a lot.
Yeah, your character sounds like someone I could scam very easily using like pyramid power or something or some.
Oh, are we getting into pyramid schemes?
like I could teach you about like orgone energy and stuff
that. Multi-level marketing.
You know what I realized? I was actually very inspired by Pearson's description. I should probably go into more of my character's fashion sense real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
My character is like, he's always wearing sort of like very, kind of like this very mix of like semi-professional. Like he might be wearing jeans, but he'll have a collared shirt, or he's wearing slacks and like a rolled up, you know, button up sleeve, and he just has a loose jean vest on, but he's not actually going to wear a suit over it or anything. Or maybe he's got slacks and suspenders and like an open sort of like long sleeve shirt. But again, he has no plans of completing that outfit. He just always looks a bit disheveled, but like he's it's like he was about to complete a very nice outfit and then something stopped.
He's like
stopped
when Slavoj Zizek does like a presentation.
Slavoj. Jeez.
Rubs nose profusely.
Oh man. I guess I probably have like a pair of appraiser specs like on my person just because, well, it doesn't do anything like mechanically, but it'd be cool. Just sounds like something you'd have. So that's sort of what my character's looking like.
Yeah, and really quick, just a side note. I don't know if you guys listened to the Bloodborne episode, or if you haven't, give it a listen to on Macabre Media Podcast. Taylor and I both kind of talked to Caleb about Bloodborne.
Gang, gang.
My biggest frustration with Bloodborne was that it's set in a fictional city of Yharnam in clearly an aged time period. But it has a Molotov cocktail in it, and it calls it a Molotov cocktail. I hate that. I think it's super dumb because there's no such thing as like Russian Molotov like bottles and stuff like that. Additionally, the game goes on to talk about Hippocratic oaths. There aren't. Let me preface in saying on Tantalus, Earth is a it's a legend. It's not even really considered to be like the ancestors of the people on Tantalus. That's why instead of calling it a Nintendo Switch trademarked by Nintendo,
That's our sponsor. Sorry, we had to
plug that. We're sponsored by Nintendo.
And Shudder.
And Shudder. That's why Mags has a G-pad instead of a Nintendo Switch, and that's why if we ever use a Molotov cocktail, we'll refer to it as like a fire bottle or something like that. So just keep that in mind. We might talk about things like playing cards and stuff like that, or but things won't be directly called that. And there's even characters with accents that sound like they could be from like New York or anything like that. Keep in mind, though, that these are just accents that have been carried on specific parts of the city that were carried over in ancient history of Tantalus. And ideally, they wouldn't actually speak English on Tantalus, but just to make it easier for listeners, and something that Tristan once said to me, it's kind of like if we did a dubbed edition of the show.
That's a good way of looking at it,
But yeah, do you guys have anything you want to talk about before we give a sign off on episode zero?
Nope, we've been recording for an hour and 12 minutes, so I think that's a good place to stop.
Yeah, I think we got the gist of it all. I don't have anything.
I'm ready to play this fucking game. Let's do it.
I'm looking forward to
it. All right, I'm gonna just do our final little advertisements sign off thing, and we'll get this show on the road. So just a few shows that I want to give a plug to, because I generally appreciate them as shows, and they're smaller, so we should definitely all give them a listen, is Advantage Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. It's an audio drama that Coffee with Comrades actually just did an interview with.
It's coming out soon.
Yes, and Coffee with Comrades is another one that I want to bring up. It's a leftist political analysis of our current world, and Pearson has on a lot of really cool guests who will talk about a variety of different things, some of which are experts in the matter, and others are just really good friends of Pearson who might be knowledgeable on a certain topic, and they can integrate leftist analysis into that topic. Is there anything else you want to say about it, Pearson?
I'll say this. By the time this is released, I'll probably have a Patreon up. So if that's something that you would be interested in supporting, you can visit www.patreon.com/coffeewithcomrades and throw a couple bucks my way so that I can keep making
that
cool podcasts.
Excellent. Definitely support Pearson so you can keep pumping out that good leftist analysis. Another podcast.
Like good propaganda, you know?
Absolutely. Another podcast I wanted to recommend is Some of All Fears podcast. This is a podcast where...
it's just fear.
Some of All Fear. All right. Well, my apologies. Some of All Fear is a podcast between a husband and wife. The husband is a history... he has his degree in history, and the wife has her degree in psychology, and they both will provide a psychological analysis of horror movies and kind of associate a specific phobia with a movie, and they have some really cool episodes. I really would encourage you guys to check them out. We also have Shattered Worlds RPG, which is it's an actual play that was made up by the GM. The system is made up by the GM, and it's a post-apocalyptic game with a really cool setting and mechanics that are not very typical for a tabletop RPG. And then last but definitely least, Macabre Media Podcast.
Oh, yes.
Macabre Media Podcast is a podcast that covers literally anything that involves horror, from movies to video games.
And anything in between.
Thank you. Is there anything else you want to say about that, Caleb?
Yeah, I want to say it's the least because you've been on the show so much.
Oh.
Oh, very good. The return.
There's nothing quite like brotherly love.
Yeah, I just made a Patreon today. A listener told me to do it, and I was like, shit, why not? The Patreon is patreon.com/ macabre_media. Or just follow me on Twitter and talk shit at me at Macabre Media Pod.
Very good. Lastly, I just want to give our thanks to Gabriel Marguetillo, I think is how you pronounce it. You can find him on Instagram at the at sign GABICUS. That's Gabicus. He designed our logo. He was he's a good friend of mine who is also into tabletop RPGs. And he was just very generous in giving us our logo. And I also want to thank our resident composer, Taylor, who is had done our intro slash outro piece that we feel very much embodies the feeling of the system arc of our podcast. So thank you, Taylor.
Yeah, it's just me. I found the effects keys on my recording program, and I'm just smashing it. It's going to sound bad. No, I'm still in the process of sort of working it out. This will be my first ever, like, venture into recorded audio. So I'm excited, though. I think it's going to sound pretty cool. So if you hear it and you like it, well, that's great. You can't really tell me, but that's great.
Well, just want to thank... thank everyone for listening. We'll have episode 1 posted at the same time as episode 0, so feel free to give that a listen directly after this if you have the time for it. In the meantime, have a good adventure out there.